Thank you all for your input, and I will do some digging on that and see what I can get to make that happen, and hopefully won't have to use EchoLink anymore here soon. Thank you, gentlemen. This is Kilo Oscar 4, Tango Mike Yankee, out.
Stuck around to ask some questions. That's what this part, this group is about. The new hams, trying to get them on the air and not let them waste money. But you're going to do that being a ham. You're going to experiment and you're going to fry a few things before you ever learn the right way. But again, I appreciate you sticking around and asking questions, Dave. David, all right, anybody else out there got any questions? Please call K4OIM.
OIM, K4NUE.
Cool, Chad.
So, not necessarily a question, just an observation. So, I'm a little bit bruised up, didn't feel like doing a whole lot today, so, I had some extra ground wire left over from grounding my station a couple months ago, about a 3-foot section of it, and decided I'd do some kind of light today, and decided to build a 2-meter dipole. So here are my observations. And it took me a little bit to figure out kind of what was going on. But, so it's a dipole that is just like a, you know, a HF dipole. But it is resonant on 145.330, which is our club's repeater there in Tron. When the antenna is in the horizontal position, it's horrible. I mean, it's awful. But when I turn it into a vertical position, I'm very pleased with it. And I think I know why that's happening, but I just want to see if that is it's got to be a polarization issue. But I just, if anybody can comment on that and let me know what I'm seeing is either right or wrong or something.
I think you're right about the polarization. KI4LCI, go ahead. Whoever's fixing it up next.
Use it horizontal stuff. Go to 2-meter sideband, and you'll notice a big difference. If you're doing 2-meter sideband on a vertical, you don't have as good a reception. You'll notice, I don't know if you noticed over here, but my 2-meter beams are horizontal instead of vertical. Going into the repeater, it doesn't make that much difference. If you want to go talk on sideband, it makes a big difference. If you're going to talk simplex, it makes a big difference. That's the reason I turned my 70-centimeter, my 440 beams, they were horizontal, and I turned them vertical so I could get into the repeaters and other people could hear me a lot better with that. But the polarization does have a lot to do with it, whether it's horizontal or vertical.
I put together two of them today. One of them was just absolutely atrocious, but I was able to hit the repeater. Then the other one was I spent an hour or so on it with the ground rod. I mean the grounding wire. And I'm still not understanding. I mean, I understand. I just if it's straight up and down, well, come in. If it's straight up and down and I tilt it, probably about 3-4 degrees. It's almost like it's directional. I don't want to say that with being a dipole, but as far as the signal reports, which, you know, I got out of the repeater, was also made a simplex contact with it. And there is a definite sweet spot there that I'm able to, you know, get a good signal report with. But I just a lot to think about why that's happening. And I think I get it. But I didn't realize it would be that sensitive.
Remember, you're on VHF. You know, it's not as forgiving as HF is. And you, like Andy said, you go to UHF, and it's even more critical. It can be a lot of fun, and can pull your hair out a little bit. But you were talking about directivity. A dipole can be directional. On my HF beams, I have a 40-meter add-on kit, which is nothing but a 40-meter dipole in reality, but it's rotatable, and it does have some directivity to it. If there's a station that's not real strong and I can rotate my antenna around, and if the signal will either come up or go down. So it's a rotatable dipole does have some directivity, and that little 2-meter dipole will be the same way.
I learned that today. The other antenna, like I said, it didn't go too well, but I was able to make a repeater with it. But I just an observation, and I got one other observation that I want to ask about. I'm not really sure how to ask it, but I just see if there's any more comments about the two antennas before I move on to the next observation.
OBK4 ORM. Chad, I have been on 40 meters on a dipole. I try working a lot of parts on the air, and I could hear somebody out there in the distance on that dipole antenna on 40 meters, and I could switch over to this Hustler 4-band vertical and go with it, or I might have been getting an S3 on the dipole. I would get a solid S9 on the vertical, but verticals on HF, they tend to be a little noisy.
Thank you, Chad. I was just picturing this in my mind. If you've taken a 2-meter dipole, and in order to have a clearer signal to the repeater, you do need vertical polarization, then you have a vertical dipole. And something that occurs to me worth mentioning is that your feed line should be perpendicular to the dipole for at least a wavelength or two, which is not very far. You know, you get a section of feed line perpendicular from the vertical dipole 3 feet away, and you're good, you're golden. But if you just let it droop from the feed point, you'll have some interaction with your feed line. You'll get a much nicer signal with a perpendicular feed line. That would be the vertical dipole and a horizontal feed line. KK4JBQ.
When I put the dipole up for the HF rig, let me make sure I got it. I have got two strings about 120 feet apart up in the top of these pine trees out here with three pulleys on each one. And when I do, you know, when I build an antenna, I can get the antenna up and down. It's probably around 50, 55 feet, I'd say, rather quickly, so I don't have to climb and get on a ladder and all that other mess. So I kind of found this out by accident. I put the 2 meter dipole up, and it took me a little bit to figure out how to tie the string on it to keep it horizontal. Well, I got halfway up with it, and the thing slipped down and almost turned vertical. And the person I was talking to said, "Oh, I don't know what you did, but boy, that sounds really good." So, by accident, I kind of figured out that, hey, maybe this thing works better vertical than it does horizontal. And as far as the feed line being perpendicular, I kind of suspected that, but I was thinking too, well, you know, this is RGA. It's shielded pretty well. Maybe that doesn't apply. I would say it's probably 2-3 inches away from one leg of the dipole when it's in the vertical position. But I'll figure that out tomorrow. I didn't realize that was going to be that big of a deal. You know, when it's in horizontal, you don't have to worry about it. But I guess from what you're saying, I'll get on the repeater again and do a little more testing to see kind of how that works out. But I learned a lot today. Every time I build one of these things, I learn something different. And I'm beginning to wonder if I'm going to ever stop learning. But that's a fun thing to do. So, KO4NUE.
KPQ. Your feed line, I'm going to ask you to imagine this in your mind. Your feed line has a center conductor and shield, but it has three circuit paths. You have the center conductor, that's one. You have the inside of the shield next to the insulator, that's two. And you have the outside of the shield next to the coating on the coax, the sheath. So the three conductors. When your feed line is too close to an element of the antenna, it will pick up the signal and mess with things. I mean, it does a real good job of messing with things. If it's a vertical dipole and your feed line is horizontal, that minimizes the interaction. The shielding isn't working for you as a shield. It's a circuit path. Remember that RF is alternating current, so it's going back and forth, up and down, on the inside and the outside of the shield. It will interact with things, especially that close. Because if it's just drooping with a horizontal dipole, I mean a vertical dipole, if it's just drooping, it's too close. And you're right, gravity takes care of this for you with the horizontal installation. Yeah, you will learn because you are stepping out. That's what you do. And this practical experience will serve you well and the mistakes or the observations of something that doesn't work, which is not really a mistake, is a better teacher than any book, any video, and really anybody else's experience, because it belongs to you. That's the experience of it. KK4JBQ.
KI4DOS.
Go ahead, Gary.
Man on the mountain, have his say. What they're telling you is absolutely correct, Chad. Think of it as an air capacitor. If you looked on the inside of that old Tentec radio, it had air capacitors in there to do tuning. And that is it's coupling from your antenna to your feed line. And that's the magnetic field around it. That's what's causing that to couple that way. And if you don't have to move it real far, it doesn't have to, your feed line doesn't have to be perfectly horizontal up to a vertical antenna, your vertical dipole. But you need to get it far enough away. You know, you may have to come out, I don't know, 3 or 4 feet, and then let it drop down. Then it will not couple. Then you may have to come out further than that. I don't know. I haven't run any calculations or anything like that on that. But 2 meter antenna is a quarter wave is about 19 inches, and so you don't have a an odd multiple of that. If you do, or if you do have that, then you're going to get some coupling, and even though you've got it stretched out a little bit, so you'll have to do a little bit of calculation on that. But just thought I'd throw that out there.
No, I had a little more experimenting to do with that. I'm trying to help a new club member out. She's in a pretty bad spot with her antenna, so I'm trying to come up with an antenna that I can help her with her station, her and her husband, but I'm not totally convinced this is going to be it. I'm thinking that Slim Jim's probably going to be the best, and the second antenna, I really didn't build it. It was just kind of thrown together. It did work. It was just horribly, horribly noisy. But, that was just let me just try this for kicks and giggles, see if it'll work. And it did. It was just, I got out of it what I put in it, if you know what I mean.
MCI. Saying earlier, one dilemma I got here with HF or not VHF or UHF. I've thought about putting up a HF vertical here, but I turn around and spend big bucks on a, say, a 10 through 80 meter vertical and put it here, and it's not that far from this very same power line I talk about. Here that makes it unsafe for me to have a dipole up, and I go to tune around here on HF, and I have all kinds of power line noise. Here I spent, and you know, 10 through 80 meter verticals in my book aren't that cheap. Spend that kind of money on all I get all kinds of power line noise on it, I ain't gonna be too happy. So FM is a little bit better, but, you know, there is still rare instances where you might pick up some noise. KI4LZI.
Well, I'll do a little more testing tomorrow, and see how that works out. But, okay, so second observation I've got, which is actually comes with a question, and this can be loaded topic, but so with that said, so I have been compiling a Excel spreadsheet, and all we're talking about HF now at 3.915 megahertz, which is South Carolina single sideband. The band conditions were just horrible at the beginning of the week. They're still not good, but I've been monitoring this net for, you know, 4 or 5 months now and trying to participate. And I keep hearing all the operators say, you know, can't wait till winter gets here when the band conditions get better and all that. Well, I know winter's not quite here yet, but I keep waiting for it to get better, and it's kind of, sort of, it's just not what I expected up to this point. But here's my observation. So if you go to QRZ.com, they have a band condition index there, where you can, you know, kind of see what's going on with the sun and all that. So I have been pulling data off of those for the past 5 days. And I thought I'd made a connection until this afternoon when I started looking at all the data so I could kind of discuss it intelligently tonight. And that just kind of blew my theory, sort of. So there's a lot of information on that little solar flux index there. And one thing I have noticed that is common was that on Monday and Tuesday night this week, the band conditions were absolutely horrible. I mean, just atrocious. So here's what I've noticed is that there's a lot of numbers there on that index chart, but one that I have found that is correlating undisputably with poor band conditions is the solar winds. So the solar wind index on Monday and Tuesday was over 400. Monday was 416, and Tuesday was 406 or something like that. The last couple nights have been down in the low 300s, and the band conditions have been better. So is there a connection with solar winds? I'm assuming that, well, I don't want to assume anything. Is it possible for something worded as a solar wind to blow a magnetic field around? Is that how that works? I mean, how do you blow a electromagnetic field around, or is it just what's coming off of the plasma from the sun? Let me make sure I got it. Just keep collecting data and see if I can make a connection somewhere else. But I've got a week's worth of data that I'm trying to compile, and it's got to be in one of these numbers. In other words, what I'm trying to do is go to the solar flux index and look at one number to see what my band conditions are going to be for that band. And something tells me it's not going to be about one number. And I'm going to have to figure that out. So my question is, how do you guys, as an HF operator, do you just get on the band to see if it's open and try to communicate, or do you just... Do any of you use the solar flux index or indicator to see how the band conditions are before you try to talk, or is that just for like DXers for the upcoming weekend or something?
I don't know if you were listening before the sideband hit tonight. There was a gentleman got in there and he said that gave some report about where the solar activity was, and he said that it when we started talking about about 20 minutes till 7, this figure was like a number 7. By 7 o'clock, or right about 2 minutes till 7, it had dropped to a 3. And as that number drops down, the local coverage, where we could talk local to each other, went away. The band went long. And that has to do with solar flares and solar winds and all this. It affects the, I can't remember which layer it is now. But up in the ionosphere, where we bounce our signals off of, that changes. And that, when we have a lot of solar flares, DX is really, really good. The signals bounce off the ionosphere real good, and they hop over here, and they may make more than one hop as far as that goes. So I guess in an answer to part of your question is, yes, the solar winds and the solar flares and all that do affect HF, whereas VHF and UHF, temperature inversions, tropospheric ducting has to do with propagation on that more so than it does with HF. So, you know, we've got to deal with what we're dealt that day, whether, you know, which band is open and which one's not. You can look on, and I can't tell you where it's at now, but I'll have to find out. But there is a thing that tells you pretty much when the band is opened and when it's not. But I can't remember exactly what that is. I turn mine on and twist the dial around and throw my call out a few times, and somebody comes back to me, it's open, and if it don't, it's not open. But 80 meters and 160 meters does real well in the wintertime. In the wintertime, for DXers, and you know, most of the time, the noise level goes down. The reason being, time my radio out again. In the summertime, we have electrical storms, and that's where a lot of the noise comes from. We don't have as many thunderstorms and that sort of stuff in the winter as we normally do in the summer. So that's why a lot of folks say it's the band condition gets better. You don't have the static crackles and all of that as much in the wintertime as you do the summer.
Okay, let me make sure I got it. So by the time this data is collected, the band conditions can change. I had a young fella over here tonight with his dad, and I missed the about 20 minutes before the single sideband. But I think what I'll do is just, probably the best thing to do is just see if, I was trying to figure out a way to get to the point to where I could look at the index and say, okay, well, today might be a good day to try to go to Australia or Costa Rica or something. And I'm sure I can do that. Obviously, this information is posted for a reason. I'm just not sure that it's posted for the same reason that I want to use it for. I just haven't. I'm not sure what to say, really. Other than, let me put it this way. I have noticed a correlation with a couple of the numbers. One of them is the solar winds, but I have not compiled the rest of the data yet. And I just wanted to know, you know, do you guys use this index, or do you just get on the radio and then if somebody answers, you talk? And that's really all I'm interested in. I'm not into the DXing and things like that. I could see how some of these numbers would be important for people who are interested in that. But I'm just interested in just enjoying the radio, enjoying having a conversation with somebody across the world. And I really don't care who it is. I'm not trying to hit a specific target. Half the time, I'm just excited if everything works. So I'll just leave it at that, I guess. But I'm just trying to learn all of this data, trying to predict, and I'm just not sure I'm gonna be able to do that as of yet. But I'll keep putting the data together. But I'm thinking what you said, Gary, is just, hey, for what I'm doing, just push the button, and if somebody answers, then go with it. If not, then it is what it is. Am I hearing that right?
Check out for LCI. Just for playing, so to speak. I've noticed in QST over the years, in the early spring, the people down in Antarctica open up and work hams from other parts of the world in the early spring from down there in Antarctica, taking bigger for all that, or try to, and try someday, hopefully you'll live long enough to try and see if you can work them. That'll give you kind of a challenge right there for sure. KI4LCI, go ahead, Gary.
A lot of it has to do with the gray line, too, Chad. There was a, I don't remember, I'd have to go back in my log and see who it was now, but a guy checked in, and he checked out early because he was going to go to bed. He was going to get up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning when they are somewhere in that neighborhood, or, you know, 4:30 or 5, and work the gray line because the gray line was between him and the place he wanted to make contact with. And he did. He made contact with him, which was a good thing. And one other thing that you can do, I don't have it on mine right now, but I did have a connection between my radio and my computer. And I could turn it on, and it had a waterfall on there, and whatever frequency you were on, it showed the frequency on the screen, and then you could see the peak signals that were coming in, and it, most of the time it gave the station's call signs, and that's another way to do it. Also, you can go to the DX spotters. And they'll tell you, if people post on there, you know, well, I just heard so-and-so. And then you go to that frequency, and if you can hear them, you might be able to work them. And sometimes you go over there, and they're not there. You don't hear them at all. But most of it depends on propagation, and it's what the solar flares are doing, and solar winds, and what they're doing up in the ionosphere, and which layer that they're bouncing off of, and energizing, and this sort of thing. Kind of like the northern lights, so to speak. You know, they come on real strong sometimes, and then the other times they're gone completely. So we can't control Mother Nature. So that's all I'll say about that. But
There's several different ways that you can go in there and find stations if you want to look for stuff like that.
I'll take it at that. But right now, I just am enjoying putting the call out there and see if I can get somebody to respond. And when you have a couple minutes of failure, and then you finally make contact with somebody, I mean, that's pretty exciting. So thus far, I've made it to Australia, Puerto Rico, and a whole bunch of states here in the United States. But for some reason, it's kind of like I haven't been able to get outside of the United States in quite a few weeks. And I just said, well, you know, maybe something's wrong with the antenna or whatnot. But that's kind of what moved me to this chart, to see if I could make a connection somewhere, to see if it's something up with my station or if it's just the band conditions. And it's just a combination of a whole bunch of stuff. Like Larry said a couple months ago, everything affects everything. And probably 2 days out of the week, I'm interested in pursuing, trying to solve all that. But the other 3 days, I'm just like, hey, let me just sit down and enjoy a conversation with somebody. And that seems to be where I end up more often than, you know, spending a whole lot trying to figure that out. But I'll take your word of advice and just enjoy the station for what it is. And when a problem presents itself a little bit more solidly, then I'll pursue it at that time. But I'm just kind of enjoying things the way they are. And Gary, to answer your question, earlier today, probably be Monday, I'll give you a call over the weekend and we'll discuss it, but Monday. So thank you for helping me out there, Gary and Andy. I appreciate it. And that's all I've got tonight. It wasn't very good questions, just observations, but it's nice to be able to share and listen to what everybody's got to say. So with that, no more questions, but I will hang around. Thank you, fellas. I appreciate you. I appreciate you taking the time to spend with me. KL4NUE, and I'll be standing by.
Hey, Chad, one other thing to keep in the back of your mind. During the daylight hours, 10, 12, 15, 17, 20, and 30, well, 30 is pretty good most time anyway, that's CW. Daylight hour bands. Your 40 meters is pretty decent most of the day, but if you want to make long distance contacts on 40, 80, or 160, nighttime is better. You can make contacts on 80 meters, at 12 o'clock noon, but it's. You can't hear anybody real, real far off. If you're trying to make a DX contact, you want to wait till it's dark. So just keep that in the back of your mind, you know. 10, 12, 15, 17, 20 is better in daytime than it is at night. And then 40 and 80, 40, 60 and 80 are better at night than they are in the daylight. Just food for thought. That's what I found out. KI4DOS.
Gary. All right. Let's talk about something else besides. Well, let's talk about something else. I don't want to bore everybody to death with same questions. Andy, how was your day, sir?
Talking about the very subject. And this one guy, he compared the propagation report about what bands were open and what bands were closed. He compared that to watching your news, your weather on your local news station, comparing that with Poor Richard's Almanac.
Chad doubled there for a bit.
No, go ahead, Chad.
I've got to get out here while I got the hammer here, but I need to get out for insulin issues, but ever so often, sometime in early, I don't remember now, I've read in QST for many years, but in early spring, those down there and down in Antarctica work people around the world from down there. So somewhere down the line, you ever get those numbers just right, you might want to try to work them someday. Y'all go ahead and whoever's to pick it up now, pick it up. Okay, if y'all still here when I get back later, I might come then. Okay, I4LCI, got to go take in.
Have a good night, sir. Yeah, I'll be standing by.
All I need is either this morning or yesterday on 40 meters, and this one guy was comparing that propagation report you get on the QRZ webpage. He compared that to listen to what the meteorologist on your news station is saying about the weather, and then compare that to Poor Richard's Almanac. I know myself, I went on there and they would say 20, 15, and 10 was closed. It was in red. And I could get on 10 meters and throw my call out two or three times and somebody would come back to me. But it's more like what Terry says, it's hit and miss. Just get on there and throw your call out, and somebody don't come back, move up the band a little bit or down a little bit, throw it out again.
Thank you. It's occurred to me from time to time that while this is a dog to deal with, we're fortunate in a way. If it were quite easy to use in the vans, quite reliable any time of day, or even reliable all the time during a certain time of day or night, then we would have a lot of competition with commercial interests. That's encouraging in a way, because we'll keep our spectrum for a lot of reasons. But one of them might be is that it's not easy to work from. It really isn't. So if I can, I want to say something to Chad before the hour gets too late. I worked on the antenna a little bit today, the high tower antenna that I have. I took it down, cleaned it up a little bit, because it's bare copper, so I've got my fingerprints all over it and everything, and I, you know, as a jeweler, I like shiny metal. But once I get it that way, it's gonna gather a patina in a organized way. Excuse me. And I lashed it down to the privacy fence, which is my support, and so I wanted to weatherproof the feed point. And I opened up a package that I've had for a very long time, a package of coax seal. I'd never used that stuff before. I know some of you have. And it was a bit surprising because it was a lot like really sticky chewing gum. It's black, of course, and there's pictorial instructions on the package. Just wind it around and then kind of squish it together to make a real good seal. And I did that, but it's not pretty. but I'm pretty sure I'm sealed against the weather there. Anyway, wanted to toss out a thank you again, Chan. I'm talking on it right now with 1 watt, KK4 JPQ.
Hill 4 NUE, let me make sure I got it. That's pretty good. You got a little bit of noise in there, Larry, just a little bit. Not like it was last night, but I mean, nothing to worry about. But I'm just glad you're using it, and it was just a pleasure. It was a pleasure to make the thing, because I got an opportunity to put what I learned in it, and just let you know I appreciate your time and investing in me. Somebody don't even know. I don't want to get all weird and hinky, but I just, I appreciate it. But at any rate, with that said, Walt, go ahead and take it.
Gary, I'm going to have to get out of here myself now, because I got to get up early in the morning to get my grandson ready for school and take him to school. And so I'll say 73KI4DOS and KK4JBQ and KI4LZI if he's back yet, and KO4NUE. It's been a pleasure calling the net tonight and talking to you guys. So I'll say 73, but I'll be around to listen to a few comments.
UE real quick, Walt, before you leave. Let you know I'm going to bring my bow tie over there and let you hold it a while. KO4NUE.
All of them doggone voodoo dolls while you were over there in Europe, and you jinked my station.
I didn't voodoo anything. You voodooed yourself.
Well, he's a little nephew now. He's a narcotic agent for Spartanburg. But when he was about, he started taking karate lessons when he was about 4 years old. And I don't know where he got it, but he got a voodoo doll. And I was over there at my sister's, and he was over there. Uncle Walt, I got a voodoo doll. And he stuck a needle in the head, and he said, "Do you feel that?" But he kept that doggone voodoo doll, I don't know how long, and called it Uncle Walt.
Oh, mercy, Walt. You're a character. I'm glad you're on this net. Oh, my goodness. That's good, bud. That's funny. Listen, I'll let the other guys clear out with you. And I appreciate you. And, don't get no voodoo noodle stuck in you on the way up to the house. And if you turn that router off again, you better know karate, because that grandson of yours is going to get you. Have a good day tomorrow, Walt. KO4NUE, 73 to you. I'm clear. KK4JBQ, KI4DOS, KO4NUE.
Thank you.
Larry, just I'll drop by for a few more minutes and just see how your day went and all. Yeah, everything good your way?
It was a good day. I worked outside most of the day, up and down the ladder, and I didn't mention that I raised the feed point. Oh, maybe another 4 feet as I installed this antenna. I wanted to put it up initially just to prove whether it was going to be a little bit better than the one that was there. Well, I've taken the one that was there and cleaned it up and stored it away. Both of them was 2 meter only, and there's no reason to keep up an inferior antenna. yours replaces it entirely. There are the things you can always improve things incrementally, just a little bit here and there. The pass through that I made to go through my sunroom is made with three panels. The center panel is an actual door with a doorknob and lock and such. But the builder used the same thing. It looks like a door. It's the same thing. The same number of lights and all that for windows on either side. I'd never seen that done before. They did it successfully, and I suppose there was an advantage of having, you know, filling this wall with windows since this room in the house is called the sunroom. In the evenings, I get the western setting sun, and it gets hot in here. Oh, boy. So, the doors are fire doors, steel, you know, on both sides. So cut through them is no easy deal. But I passed through three connections. I was optimistic at the time. And this goes back, you know, 9.5, 10 years ago. I was optimistic thinking that maybe I could get as many as three antennas out there in this little backyard. No kidding, it's no wider than an alley in, you know, a city street. So any antenna I use is going to involve the house in some way. And I've tried different things like a delta loop, which was normally a delta loop is vertically polarized, but you can use them as a horizontal loop as well. Well, I used something in the middle, a sloped delta loop over the roof of the house, and it picked up all kinds of noise from the house. So I'm a little bit compromised any way I go, but for 2 meters, I'm in high cotton right now. I really am. I'm just so thankful that you for some reason saw what little I've been able to contribute as of value, and I appreciate that. KK4JBQ.
Appreciate it. I really do. But things went okay here today, I guess. Still just a little bit sore and don't feel quite right, but I don't know, Larry. That scared me, but I gotta be a little more careful. Me and Anna were talking about that this morning. We have coffee time in the morning, and I got everything fixed so that don't ever happen again. But I've been thinking a lot about that today, and my goodness, I mean, that could have ended really bad. But it didn't. I just have to learn from it, I guess. But I just been thinking a lot about that, and I'm glad it was okay. But things look good, I guess. Me and Anna looked at the weather report today, and it's time to start cutting firewood again. So I guess I'll get busy next couple of days. And I got a 10-foot dump trailer down here, and I need 10 loads to get through the winter. So I guess I'll get started on it this week. And, the other thing I was going to tell you, too, was this morning, I had a guy call me this morning about 9 o'clock. I th- think his work has kind of slowed down a little bit, so he's doing some home repairs. And he had a 8x8 cedar square post that was left over from a job site, about 8 feet long. And he's not working, so his wife's got him doing home repairs. So he called me and wanted to know if I could cut the post in half for a mantle to go in his home. And I cut a lot of mantles for people to go in their homes. And so I told him, yeah, I'd be glad to. So he showed up about 11 o'clock and brought his wife. And when they got out of the truck, they weren't arguing. You could just tell, though, that there was a little bit of tension. And I guess she was trying to explain to him what she wanted in the mantle. And evidently they had a little bit of a disagreement. And I wouldn't say that. They were just... maybe he didn't quite understand what she was saying. Let me word it that way. So she was very kind of guarded when she got out of the truck. And he was kind of doing most of the talking. And, you know, I could tell she was very reserved. And he was trying to explain what, you know, what he wanted. And just that whole conversation between the three of us going to the meal, at some point she was just relieved. I mean, just relieved. Because sometimes I understand my wife. She has something in her mind the way she wants it to look. But sometimes it's difficult for her to get me to understand that. So, let me let this thing drop. I'll be right back.